So it's our good fortune that we have access to the spiritual world, and that simply by chanting such a bhajan like Jai Radha Madhava, that we can invoke presence in Vrindavan. And that is great comfort, because the whole material world is crazy, and it will always be crazy, and always something will happen that will make things crazy sooner or later. But then to invoke Vrindavan, that's another level. So by that, for that reason, I became inspired about the spiritual sky. So therefore, I decided to speak on the Bhagavad Gita as it is, on chapter 8, entitled Attaining the Supreme, text number 20.
Parastasmattumbhavanyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana yasa sarvesu bhutesu nasyatsu navinasyati.
Paraha, transcendental, tasmat, to that, to, but, bhava, nature, anya, another, avyakta, unmanifest, avyaktat, to the unmanifest, sanatana, eternal, yaha, yasa, that which, sarvesu, all, bhutesu, manifestation, nasyetsu, being annihilated, na, never, vinasyati, is annihilated. Translation. Yet there is an other, unmanifest nature, which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. Purport. Krishna's superior spiritual energy is transcendental energy. It's transcendental and eternal. It is beyond all the changes of material nature, which is manifest and annihilated during the days and nights of Brahma. Krishna's superior energy is completely opposite in quality to material nature. Superior and inferior nature are explained in the seventh chapter.
Om Agyanati Mirandasya Ginandana Salakya Shakshur Miritam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupakadame Andadati Svapadantikam.
So, all relationships with the external energy of Krishna are always painful. It begins with our relationship with the body, and it begins with other bodily relationships, and it continues with our relationship with the other aspects of the material energy. It's all suffering, sooner or later, because Bhagavad Gita explains that dukaliyam ashashvatam, everything is temporary and full of misery. So part of us, the bodily part, is suffering, and there is no doubt about it that this is a fact, and no one is exempt. Body includes gross body, subtle body. But when we speak about the spiritual world and about our relationship with that spiritual world, that's the only relationship where we are saved from this misery. Our bodies are always, again and again, getting us in some sort of trouble. Right? So much trouble comes through them. Yes. And anything we do in this world is also troublesome, sooner or later, although it may start off so nice. There's always a crocodile on the path. What to do? And we consider each other crocodiles. What can we do? You know? Yeah. But in the end, right, let us look at the spiritual world. Yeah. There we have some. So in our spiritual life, we have that, the connection with the spiritual world and with Vrindavan, and that connection with Vrindavan is very important. So this month of Kartik is very wonderful, because it is specifically giving us an opportunity to get into the mood of Dham Seva. We can really begin to approach Vrindavan, even although we are here in Amsterdam, just by Dhammadharastika, some Vrindavan atmosphere descends, and we are contemplating the reality of Mother Yasoda capturing Krishna somehow or other, which is impossible because the Supreme Lord is not easily captured. But she captures him by her devotion, by her love. So that is the spirit of Vrindavan, right? That Krishna must be captured, that one must chase after him with great speed, with great eagerness, in other words. And then he must be tatra lulyam apimulyam ekalam, it is pointed out. This eagerness is important. So Mother Yasoda displayed it by running after Krishna and then tying Krishna finally, although she could not do so without the Lord's consent, right? Without the Lord's mercy, because each time the rope that she used for tying Krishna was too short, and she had to add more rope, and still it was two fingers too short. One finger for the mercy of the Lord, and then the other finger for her own endeavor. So in this way, we are right in Vrindavan simply through observing the Kartik Vrat. How nice, how great is our fortune, because we are being transformed, and everyone to some extent is transformed to and is transferred to the Holy Dham, right? Somehow or other. And so our whole process is doing so. It is explained that the very meaning of the Maha Mantra also is actually including the entire activities of the spiritual sky. And therefore, the Maha Mantra also is invoking the spiritual sky. Because the entire rasa of the spiritual sky is included in the Maha Mantra. Because Hara is representing Srimati Radharani, and Hare is a form of that, or is representing all the Vaishnavas. The word Hara is representing the entire party of the devotees who are all rendering service to the Supreme Lord and stealing away his attention and stealing away his heart. So this is Hara, and Krishna, the all-attractive, is attracted to the devotional service of his devotee. That is the spiritual sky. So there are so many contemplations on the spiritual sky. And I remember that in one particular reception in South Africa, where Bhakti Charumaraj arrived and was greeted by hundreds of devotees enthusiastically in the temple, and Maharaj spoke about the spiritual world. And he mentioned how in the spiritual world, all the relationships are simply based on love, love for Krishna. And because everyone is serving Krishna, everyone is appreciating everyone. What a world, right? Being in this material world of crocodiles, one gradually develops a desire to go to the spiritual world. Enough crocodiles for me, right? Let's get out of here. It's too much. Enough pain, enough suffering. It's not going to work. Therefore, we see that sages, as described in the Vedic literature, such as the sage Loma Harsana Muni, for example, developed the spirit of no interest in the material world. Loma Harsana was that famous sage who was offered a shelter by his disciples and said that, "Nah, that's all right. I don't really need anything. This material world is temporary." But at the same time, Loma Harsana had a benediction that he would live as many lifetimes as there were hairs on his body. And he was, so one can imagine, that was quite a long lifespan. And yet, he had to He had no interest in making a comfortable situation in the material world. Of course, when we are dealing with Bhagavatam, we are dealing with many great personalities who are difficult to imitate. Bhishma Dev is lying on a bed of arrows and still instructing Yudhisthira Maharaj. It's impossible for us, right? Impossible. We could not do such a thing. We could not tolerate such pain. We could not function. We could not possibly deal with the amount of austerity that we see being performed by the great personalities of Srimad Bhagavatam. Still, austerity is the wealth of the Brahmanas. That must be considered. So austerity means that even while the crocodiles are biting, somehow or other, we tolerate the material disturbance, the suffering of the material energy, and continue with our devotional service. Because we're not looking for separate austerity. We are not in the age where we are going to sit in the middle of the winter up to the neck in ice-cold water and meditate upon the Supreme Lord. That's not our process. That was the case in previous ages, and there was a type of yoga which was performed by Rishabdev, which is described as Jada Yoga, or the yoga of being like a stone, or being totally dull and just tolerating anything and everything. Right? That's not our age nor our process. Our process is simply is comfort, take the necessary comfort, but tolerate ultimately whatever comes up in the course of devotional service. And what comes up, right? What can we say? What can we do? But meanwhile, we may not be not really be happy with that and desire to go back to the spiritual world. But if we do so, then if that is our motivation, then it is not pure devotional service. Because then there is a selfish motivation for going back to the spiritual world. So therefore the great pure devotees of the Lord, they really come to the point, right, where they are apitulyata darsinaha. They are totally in a state of consciousness where it is Swarika Apavarika Narakesu, whether they are going to heaven or whether they are going to hell, it doesn't really affect their consciousness because they are Vasudeva Parayana, always absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is really what is required, that we are always absorbed in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev. Who is the source of all goodness and who is served by his devotees. And these are the things that are really important. More important than anything else in our day are these moments. Right? Sometimes we have disagreements, yes, amongst Vaishnavas. Nowadays, many times. Sometimes it's not even the words anymore. Many times. And that's all right. But we must learn the art of not letting these disagreements spill over into our spiritual relationships. We should see that our spiritual practices is what it's all about. And that is the essence. And everything else, what can be said, what can be done, right? These things are going on. And, yeah. Inevitable. This is the inevitable friction of the bamboos in the forest, it says in Srimad Bhagavatam. Right? No one knows how it began. It's the wind. The wind. That's the wind. Because how much more important is our meditation on the spiritual world? This lifetime is so short. And then if we actually managed to become deep in our meditation on the spiritual world, we might be transferred there. So how can we all get so worked up, right, about things? So this I'm trying to remind myself again and again of this principle. Whenever the three modes of material nature, the wind, are bringing about a very, very intense situation. In the 12th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, there is the description of Markandeya Rishi. Markandeya Rishi was a great devotee who had great love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But then Markandeya Rishi developed curiosity. He developed curiosity to see the material energy, right? To see the illusory energy of the Lord at work. Right? That was his desire. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that the Lord, or this is Bhagavatam still, Bhagavatam is stating that the Lord smiled, right, when Markandeya Rishi was requesting like this. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is commenting that when the Lord was smiling, he was actually smiling wryly, or wryly means not in a... He was smiling in a mood from, well, what can I do? You know, if this is what he desires, there's nothing I can do about it. And when the Lord... So it wasn't kind of a smile from, this is wonderful, but it was a smile from, well, okay, if this is what you want, then go for it. But curiosity for my illusory energy is dangerous, because sometimes the jiva falls prey to this illusory energy and becomes addicted to sinful activities, Vishwanath Chakravarti says. So a strong point on the side of the four vadis, right? One could say it's or those who say that the jiva can fall from the spiritual world. So what can we say? Markandeya Rishi then continued, and suddenly there was a great storm. There was a great huge storm, and this storm was not only just blowing in one particular city or one particular country. It was blowing over the entire planet. In fact, it was blowing through the entire universe. And Markandeya Rishi could see how all the four oceans were on all sides and highly agitated. And he could see how the demigods were suffering and tormented under this huge, huge storm. And then he himself was swept up in the whole thing. And he was suffering and freezing and cold and just wet. And it started to rain and rain and rain. And a huge flood came about. And there was no one to be seen anywhere. And it seemed that he was the only survivor. And he was just walking and wading through the water everywhere. And somehow or other, he managed to stay alive. He didn't know how and when and what. And then he saw a small island. And on that small island, there was a banyan tree. And in the leaf of that banyan tree, he saw a very small, beautiful, effulgent personality of bluish, blackish complexion. And he wondered, it was like a baby type of form, a child form. And he was wondering, who is this child? And he could not recognize that this was the Supreme Personality of Godhead at that time. But yet, then, and that child was sucking its own toe, because so many are desiring the dust of the lotus feet of the Lord, that the Lord decided, let me check out this dust myself and see what it does. So the Lord used this pastime to suck his own toe. And when Markandeya Rishi saw all this, then the Lord revealed his transcendental identity for a moment. And yet, then just when Markandeya wanted to touch the Lord, he disappeared. And suddenly, the entire storm disappeared, the entire oceans disappeared, and Markandeya Rishi was back in his hermitage. So the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is so intense. One point I forgot to mention, that there were huge aquatics in these oceans, and they were fighting with one another, and in the process almost trying to devour Markandeya. And somehow or other he managed to escape. He didn't know how or what. It is an interesting narration in the Bhagavatam. And it resembles what our own life and what we are experiencing. And we can see that what is really important is our love for Krishna. And it takes a long time for that to sink in, you know. Like we may say, yes, what is really important is our love for Krishna. And then 10 years later, we say it again. What is really important is our love for Krishna. And again, 10 years passed, and we may say again, what is really important is our love for Krishna. But how much do we actually put it in front of everything else? How much are we actually making it the real priority, our love for Krishna? Right. Say, do we really have love for Krishna? Of course we have. Otherwise, why would we be here? Right? We would not go through all this if there was no love for Krishna at all. Some love for Krishna is there. May not be very much, but there is some love for Krishna. So let us develop this love for Krishna by somehow or other hearing and chanting and serving him. And everything else, what can be said? What can be done? It comes and goes again and again. This is the nature of material life. You can't win in the material world. There's nobody who wins in the material. There are no winners in the material world. Parabhavastavat abhudajato. Nayigyasitam atmatattvam. One will always be defeated until one comes to the point of requiring into atmatattva, into the truth about life. The truth and spiritual subject matter. Atatu bhyam brahma yigyasa. To inquire into the absolute truth. And until that time, parabhavas tavata bodhijato, we will be defeated. This is actual reality. So what can we do? All of us are being defeated in our life, right? Isn't it amazing that everyone has dreams and he's being defeated? Is there anyone who's exempt from being defeated in his life? I'm defeated in mine. My dreams are being shattered all the time, right? And then 2 years ago, Palladananda Swami, our astrologer, told me that this is probably the happiest period of your life. And it's looking at, is this it? Is this it? And I go like, oh God, long live the astrologer. This is it, eh? Thank you, Maharaj. I wonder what more is coming. I know what was there before. It was worse, that's true. But what else is coming? Oh, no. So what to do? What to do? Parabhavastavatabhudajato. It is like this. A Vaishnava has to learn to take everything with a grain of salt, as they say in English, right? To take things with a grain of salt means to not take things very serious. If we take the material world too serious, it will spoil our meditation on Krishna. And this can happen so easily, and this is very sad. So we should be careful. There are so many people who feel there are good reasons to be very, very disturbed. I can understand, you know. What to do? The best thing is to decide not to be disturbed as much as possible, which is not easy. It takes a lot of breath. Still, that is the best, to try and not be disturbed. This is not a KK Swami concoction, but this refers to the term nirapeksha. Nirapeksha means to not be affected by the material energy, right? So for that purpose, one must become akinchana gocharam or niskinchanasya bhajanat bhagavan, niskinchanasya bhagavat bhagavan mukasya, bhajanon mukasya. One must worship the Supreme Lord by become deeply absorbed in bhajan to the Supreme Lord, but in a spirit of niskinchan. Niskinchan means to be materially exhausted, to not be so preoccupied with the loss and gain of material life, but to just say, okay, I will worship the Supreme Lord in any condition of life. And it is so nice to see the sadhus in India, you know, because they don't have anything. The traveling sadhus, right? I love that about India, that there are these traveling sadhus sitting on a railway platform with their little jute bag, and they take a picture out of there, and they just are worshipping their Lord, right? It is just, I know they may not always have a proper understanding, but still, it's nice to see that that this exists, you know. It just creates an atmosphere where you feel like, you know, it's something otherworldly. And the first time when I saw that, immediately I felt this is really something else. And I also went to sleep on the railway platform, right? And wasn't that bad, actually. And saved the money. So many times I slept on the railway platforms in the city, because it was the only place where you could sleep for free without getting your throat cut. Safe place. So nice, actually, following in the footsteps of those sadhus. But when I got closer to some of them, then one told me a nice story. One Baba told me a nice story. He told me a story about a desire tree which was in the forest. And he said there was a great, great forest. And in that forest there was a desire tree. And one man went into that forest and he was looking for the desire tree. But he couldn't find, and he was just looking and looking and looking. And then after weeks of searching in that huge forest, he was exhausted, and in the evening time he came at an open spot in the forest, and the sun was shining in just before setting, and there was a big tree, and he decided to just sit down and lean against that tree. And he was thinking, I hope there are no tigers here. And immediately there was a tiger, and the tiger just jumped in front of him and ripped him to pieces and ate him. And there was a man who was going into the forest, and he had heard that there was a desire tree in the forest. And he went to look in that forest for the desire tree. And he was looking for many weeks, and he still could not find the desire tree. And then, after 3 weeks of looking in the forest, he came to an open spot in the forest, and so on, and he saw a tree, and it was just, the sun was just setting, and he sat down, and he thought, I hope there are no tigers here. And immediately a tiger appeared and ripped him to pieces and devoured him. Right. Anyway, the story, as you understand, can go on and on and on. The purport of it is that obviously he found the desire tree, and that by negative meditation on an object, his desire was also fulfilled, which is not against the scriptures, because in Bhagavatam there is also a mention that there was the little worm who was hiding in his hole and kept in there by a wasp, and that that worm in the next life became a wasp, right? So due to his fear of the wasp, he became the wasp. So the negative meditation on the wasp also caused him to be wasp. And the whole point was
that in this way the living being was reincarnating and then reincarnating again. So he told me the story and the explanation of it, and well, it was interesting. I was impressed, right? Wow, this is quite deep, actually, thinking about it. But then the next day, he invited me to come and smoke some ganja with his friends, right? And I decided to keep my distance from these sadhus. But at the same time, I absorbed the atmosphere and just did it on my own until I came across the bona fide sampradaya. And when I saw the devotees, and I saw the devotees in Vrindavan, in the temple, when I went there, then I saw that the devotees meant real business, because the devotees, they were really working. They were giving everything for Krishna. And the day was so full of activity for Krishna. And from that, I could understand that this movement is genuine. Right? Because they were not holding back any energy. All the energy they had, they gave for Krishna. But at the same time, not everything was all sweet and rosy. Right? At one point, I developed a boil on the side of my head due to the heat, and I walked into the doors next to the altar, and there was just one of the senior pujaris who was coming up the staircase with his hands full with deity paraphernalia, and the door was in his way, so he kicked the door and it hit me on the head with the boil. So there I was standing then, and then in the middle of all that, he said with a healthy French accent, "You fool! Can you not see where you are walking, you idiot?" So, I must admit that the French accent added a little bit of sharpness, something the sharpness of moutarde, which of mustard, which French mustard, you know, which made the chastisement even burn more. And I decided to take a temporary vacation of Krishna consciousness right there on the spot. And the thing was, I didn't have any money at the time with me. I did have some money here in the Netherlands. So I went in India, and I didn't sleep on the railway platform this time, but I went to the tourist camp where you could stay for 2 rupees on the grass. And I borrowed someone's guitar, and I was playing guitar in Delhi on the street to make money. But then, one day I was thirsty and went into a little restaurant and sat down, and suddenly the light went out. And then, after a minute, which in India happens, the light goes out. Then after a minute, the light went back on, and there was a cigarette and matches lying in front of me. And I said, "Oh no, Maya. Oh no, Maya, you're not going to get me like this. No way." Right? And then I walked away. And when I came back in the tourist camp, someone pushed a big ball in my hand, black and soft, hashish, straight from the Himalayas. And I go, "Oh no, what do I do now?" So, sometimes the tests are insurmountable, and sometimes it is difficult for one to conquer. But we actually don't want, and we actually are not happy when we have our weak moments. So we still remember Krishna and regret. And there was a whole music thing going on there with young hippies, and their favorite song was that fortunately we have the key to escape reality. And then they would pull out a joint, right? And I really thought, my God, this is disgusting. And I threw that ball away, whatever was left of it. And I thought, this is disgusting. This is disgusting. So Krishna saved me. So in this way, spiritual life is not always just
easy. But whatever goes on, we must be careful that we don't do anything which harms our progress to the spiritual world. And that we keep on building up our real activity. What are we really living for? We're really living for spiritual practice, spiritual relationship, spiritual matters, because we want to go back to Godhead this lifetime. Somehow, that's what we're here for, and for nothing else. And whatever is going on, I know. Believe me, I also know that it shouldn't be going on the way it is going on. And I'm also in my own spheres and in my own world and in my own circles. I've been treated many times in ways that I thought, it's not fair. Yeah, it's true. I thought many times, but what can we do in the end, say fair or not fair? Let's go to the spiritual world, right? Because the material world will never be fair, never ever. It will never be okay, never. And, you know, there will never be enough love. Yeah, there used to be that song, because there's not enough love to go around, right? Yeah, and sympathy is what we need, my friend. And half the world hates the other half because there's not enough love to go around. So this is a fact. This is the material world. What can we say? Jivo jivasya jivanam. It is a strange world where one living being eats another. It says, jivo jivasya jivanam, that one living being is food for another. Although that doesn't authorize meat eating, still, this is the basic arrangement. So, there's something fundamentally wrong, right? Something fundamentally wrong in this place, in this body, in this material existence. And therefore, we got to get out of here. We got to get out of this place, if it's the last thing we ever do. Yeah? We got to get out of this material world, right? There is a better life for me and you, right? So what can I say? This is the reality that we are facing. And we're fortunate. Ultimately, we're fortunate. And the more we recall this good fortune, the more grateful we become. And gratitude is a great sentiment for a Vaishnava. The more a Vaishnava is absorbed in a spirit of gratitude, gratitude to all. Thank you, my Lord, for somehow or other sending devotees on my path. Thank you, devotees, for somehow or other sending the Lord on my path. Thank you. Thank you all. Gratitude is really a great important quality for a Vaishnava, because in gratitude we will be... we will be naturally serving with love. When there is gratitude, when we are actually really feeling grateful, we naturally feel like we want to reciprocate with love. Right? So such gratitude is important. There's no doubt. So, what can I do? All I can say is this age is a difficult age. All I can say is sadhu sangha is not easy in the age of Kali. And I don't feel that I'm necessarily making it any easier. But whatever may be, still, there is no alternative, right? And we stay. We must stay. There's no alternative. We must stay. There's nowhere else to go. Nowhere else. No other option. So whatever happens, happens. That's the bottom line. And we must go to the spiritual world. There everything will be absolutely amazing. And some who are very advanced are already there, although they're walking in a material body. And this is the desirable platform. And we can pray that we may be there in the spiritual world. Not sometimes when we chant Dhammadharastika or when we chant Jayarada Madhava. Yamuna Tira Avanachari. And we see ourselves walking on the banks of the Yamuna. And we know that Krishna is there, residing on the banks of the Yamuna. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. We know that the Vanachari, the resident of the forest of Vrindavan, is roaming on the banks of the river Yamuna. And we also, in our mind, are roaming on the banks of the river Yamuna. And we are seeing how the river Yamuna is very gently flowing by. How can we ever forget? Right? We recall the river Yamuna. And this is wonderful. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. So we are there, right? Whenever we chant again and again. Sometimes it is mentioned by Madhavacharya in the in his commentary on the 10th canto that Vrindavan is not, or he says Mathura, which is Mathura Mandal, which is Vrindavan is included in Mathura Mandal, and that's the district, the area. And it said Mathura is not only a place, but it is also a state of consciousness. Yes. So sometimes it seems that we have the internal Vrindavan, the Vrindavan within our heart, and we have the Vrindavan which is there between Agra and Delhi in North India that we can visit. And that we enter into the internal Vrindavan in our devotional relationship with Krishna. And this internal Vrindavan, which we always carry with us, is indeed our shelter, and we must again and again enter into this internal Vrindavan and just deeply meditate on Vrindavan. And this is bhajan. This is actually the meaning of bhajan. So such bhajan will lift us up to beyond anything material, just like Devahuti was not seeing the material energy. That will happen to us. So it's very nice. So everyone must learn that, you know, too. And then we are in Vrindavan, the holy Dham, and there we have to discover our internal Vrindavan and see that they are non-different. That's not so easy sometimes. But they are. Okay, I'll stop. Are there any questions or comments? Madhu.
The food
is not properly distributed.
So in the same way, I can also argue that the love is not properly distributed. So isn't that our duty?
Our duty.
Yeah, to make sure that the food and also the love is properly distributed.
Yeah.
It's like
Prabhupada was so Well, Prabhupada says the material world is never going to be utopia. And he said this movement also is not going to be utopia. And then he says in the same letter, even the spiritual world is not going to be utopia. What can I say? Prabhupada is pretty straightforward Srimad Bhagavatam. And there is, of course, more. There is also Pavarga. the Pavarga, Pa, Ba, Ma. And within there is Ba, which stands for Bhyartata, or being baffled in the material world. So defeat is there in material life, but then there are transcendental personalities who are never defeated. We see that Srila Prabhupada had that love, right? That extraordinary love that could just touch everyone and make everyone feel that they wanted to do what he wanted, ultimately. He knew people would surrender to him. They wanted to surrender to him. And they did. People who didn't want to surrender to anybody else wanted to surrender to Prabhupada. That's quite amazing, because he had so much love. Yeah. So I'm just also, I'm one of those people who don't want to surrender to too many, and I'm just trying to surrender to some. And by doing so, purify myself, trying to surrender to my spiritual master, trying to surrender to senior Vaishnavas, and try to surrender to my service, try to surrender to this movement, try to surrender to the scriptures, and all these things, trying.
I was more thinking in the line of
Vedic culture. Well, that's Sarvasukhino Bhavantu means is saying that Vedic culture, Vedesu Sarvasukhino Bhavantu, is the full mantra. And Vedesu Sarvasukhino Bhavantu means that if there is Vedic culture, which means Varna Ashram, everyone will be happy. But this kind of happiness is the happiness of the mode of goodness. And happiness of the mode of goodness is always lacking. Yeah. That simply means tam titiksava bharataha. That one must just simply tolerate the dualities of the material life, but not that they're not there. They're there, and the suffering is there. This is Varnashram. Vedesu sarva sukhino bhavantu. Yeah. But then Rupa Goswami says, in the Nectar of Devotion, or in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says, Lokiki Vairiki Vapo Yat Kriya Kriya Temani Hari Seva Nakulai Va. He says that whether there is ordinary practical or Vedic, whatever is Hari Seva Anakul, whatever is favorable for the service of Hari. So sometimes the Vedic may not be the preferred approach. And in this age of Kali, it is Vedic, it doesn't fully apply. It is not possible. Sometimes it's just not possible to implement Vedic injunctions. And
our philosophy words that the more you give in to material desires, the bigger they get.
Trying to renounce
your desires and give them up. That if you have never experienced a certain object of those desires, that the mind starts meditating. It's actually.
Yeah. There are also in our philosophy injunctions in that direction. For example, it is said in Bhagavatam that a wife is like a fort, and that a man takes shelter of the fort of his wife, and that in this way he's protected from the onslaught of his senses. Yeah. So, in other words, you know, like it's saying that, yes, you cannot renounce now. You are not meant for that. So, but you accept this wife, and that will save you from becoming a debauchee. Because this one, now that you have this one wife, you will you will become purified from your material desires. But if you would just be alone with your material desires, you might become a debauchee. So your wife is like a fort that will protect you from becoming a debauchee. Actually. So this is also Bhagavatam. No, but it's still, it means that, you know, like there is room for material desire. I mean, and for expression of it, of course. The scriptures never will recommend to engage in illicit activity. Now, we are living in an age where many people may have an affiliation with Krishna consciousness and yet at the same time have some connection with unauthorized activity. And how to deal with that, then it's just a matter of, with patience, you know, keep on practicing spiritual life and looking for purification. So that's preliminary then. Yeah, that's preliminary activity. So that may have to be in this age of Kali, we may have to put a step in between, a preliminary step, you know, for many. But Prabhupada many times make this point, except one wife. One. Vivaha sanskara means except one. Right? And that's it then. And whatever material desire you have, that's there. It's all happening there. And even if, even if in the relationship between husband and wife, the proper principles of Dharma are not always followed, that is less serious than if one goes outside that relationship. That would be a greater sin. More karma. What is not a rule?
If you that the desire can become bigger, trying to renounce it.
Premature renunciation. Yes, premature renunciation means that one is trying to renounce externally, but internally one keeps on dwelling on the sense gratification. So then it's premature. And then, because one keeps on dwelling, then with time one becomes quite obsessed, right? So this is a effect. So then in that stage, one must, if one renounces, not only externally give up that activity, but also internally leave it behind and internally not dwell on it anymore. And even when the mind wants to dwell on it, one has to cut the mind from dwelling on that. And if one is not capable of doing that, then one is not ready to renounce. If one is not capable of cutting the mind from dwelling on sense gratification. Well, that's what you say, but no, the mind is very strong, and sometimes you cannot control your mind because you have not sufficiently practiced mind control. To control the mind takes practice. You cannot just control the mind by a desire, now I'm going to control my mind. It doesn't work like that at all. There's no such thing as controlling the mind by just determination. First of all, nobody has any determination, no real determination in this age. So it's by practice, by devotional practice. Then one becomes stronger in controlling the mind. He was first because he was waiting. He also, are you also on this point?
Yeah, on this point.
I have direct remark on
this. He also is on the point. And you're getting your turn. But he was on the point earlier on. Okay, go.
I just want to know which canto, which verse is this about the
child? About what? The wife? Ah, boy, oh boy. Is it the fifth canto? Is it the forest of material enjoyment? Yeah, is it there? Is it in the forest of material? I think it's the forest of material enjoyment. I think in that chapter it comes up. Yeah. You think it's in the third? He thinks it's the third canto. I think it's the fifth. He thinks it's the third. You think it's Kashyapa?
Yeah.
He thinks it's Kasyapa.
I can show you after class.
Okay, he remembers it better than me. Yes.
Sunday, you said the opposite. Just let the phones ring. I thought, John.
Yeah. 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 But our philosophy is not stereotype, and therefore there is different dharmas, you know. So this is all within the realm of Kula Dharma, and Kula Dharma is simply according to Varna Ashram. So there is one is for Brahmachari, one is for Grihastha, and there are different duties for different men according to their choice of being situated in Varna Ashram. So for the Grihastha, it's not a matter of let the phone ring. For the Grihastha, it's like, you know, just engage your use your phone, but use your phone properly. No messing around with your phone, you know. It sounds a little awkward, I must admit. It's a little embarrassing. I beg your pardon?
Some desires, it's in your mind. Just go on fulfilling it.
No, but there is this room, this license is given in Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is said that to take shelter of a wife is like taking shelter of a fort, which is like basically giving this room, right, to conquer one's material desires through this regulated process of getting married. And then within that ashram, one can satisfy his material desires to some extent. So that license is there in Krishna consciousness for every devotee. He can make that choice. Now, if you desire to be a brahmachari, then there is more to the element of just letting the phone ring. Now, on Sunday, the point about just letting the phone ring, letting the senses just push and ignoring them, is based on the principle that everyone has to be ready to take this austerity of controlling the senses. It is an inevitable part of spiritual life. And Prabhupada made it just a prerequisite for regulative principles. That's it. And if someone says, I can't, you know, then they have to say, look, no, you know, you just have to decide that you're going to do it, right? Give your word, right? And then if you break them later after you've given your word, then Prabhupada would just say, but you gave your word. You gave your word. Say, yeah, but I couldn't keep my word. No, you gave your word. Yeah. So Prabhupada certainly held a lot of emphasis on this principle of making a conscious effort and a conscious commitment to the regulative principles. But if we cannot, if we still cannot after that, then it is recommended that we are, by practice, that we build up spiritual strength. And maybe then we can follow.
Because here in Amsterdam, I hear it so many times, that it's not so nice to say, but that so many people, they like, for instance, my father, you know, I know he thinks like that. If you press it and you think about it, you're a cheater. And
yeah.
So people like I work with these camera crews.
Sure.
Think like this.
Yeah.
They can't follow it, so they think, yeah, they're all cheaters.
Yeah. Well, that element is there, you know. Like, my point is this, what I said to him is this, is that you have to be able, if you want to renounce, it's not just a matter of giving up the gross activity. You have to be able to conquer the principle of jayato visya pumsam sangat sanjayate kama. Right, where jayato means meditation on sense gratification, right, will cause lust, and then you go into a whole cycle of sliding down. So therefore it is not recommended that someone takes a very renounced position if he's not able to withdraw the mind from dwelling on sense objects and on sense gratification. And therefore, okay, if the mind gets into a nasty train of thought, don't ride down the line. You know, don't immediately pull the emergency brake. The mind gets into a nasty train of thought, pull the emergency brake, get out of the train, the emergency brake, chant Hare Krishna, and step out of that and step out of that train. Don't allow the train of thought to go to the next station. Then, if you do that, and if you can't control the mind, then there is all risk of fall down. And then it's safer to just have a wife who is like a fort. That's Bhagavatam. So what's so... So it's a fine line. It's an individual choice. But ultimately, you cannot remain renounced by biting your teeth. It's not the process. And even if you have an extraordinary ability to bite your teeth, right? And you may be able to bite your teeth for until the day you die, right? No, I'll prove them wrong. I'll bite my teeth until I die. I did it, you know? That's okay, right? You know, that's not enough to go back to Godhead, right? Yeah, then that may take you to planets, right? Beyond Swarg, right? To the Maharjana Tapaloka, right? But it will not take you beyond. If the dwelling on sense gratification is strongly there. Now, But if all of that is accompanied by a lot of service, a lot of devotional service, then there is hope that you don't have to go to the Maharjana Tapalokas. Yeah. So it's the service that will save you then. Yeah. Plenty of it. Yes. Is that one question or two questions? You have a question and Krishna, and then I missed it. Description of Krishna.
I read about Brahma that actually, first of all, he was mentioning that it's good that we also think of it.
Well, no, not really. You quoted Hiranyananda Maharaj, or who did you quote? No, who said this? Who made this statement? Who made the statement? Manini Swami. He's the one. Yeah. No, but then Manini Swami will clarify it. I'm sure. You saved this one for Manini Swami. He wrote the book. It's like, yeah, I didn't write it. No, I mean, I'm a little... I haven't read it like that in Bhagavatam. And so it's like I can try and put my brain into it, but I don't know. Better Maharaj must know more than me. Huh? Go to Radhakund. When you come to Radhakund, just left. What? Oh, it's just one point for the four bodies.
I mean, you make it sound like there's two parties, all the problem. In my view, it clearly established that we did come.
Yeah. Well, there are two parties, but Prabhupada, no, there are two parties, but that doesn't mean that Prabhupada didn't give a particular conclusion. No, we understand that the GBC and many senior Vaishnavas have concluded that Prabhupada clearly established that we fell from the spiritual world, right? But, you know, there are certainly many Vaishnavas who may have a different opinion on the point. And we're not going to open up the whole issue, but we just... there are certain Vaishnavas who like to discuss about this topic, and therefore I felt, for the pleasure of those Vaishnavas, I wanted to mention just one quote on this side of the issue, not as that I want to open up the whole issue and study all the quotes at all. No, just thought, give them a quote for the archives, and leave it at that. So this is just a quote for your archive. It's not nothing more. Anybody else? Something. By the who? Yeah. No. They don't have to. It's okay. I understand. I'm not going to enter into the discussion now. I was just giving a quote for the archives. I wasn't. Nothing more. But, yeah. That's the nature of quotes. There's quote, and then there's interpretation of quote, and then there's debate and all that. And then the sun sets and the sun rises, and you know and the earth spins around its axis. All that. Yeah. So I don't know about that. Okay. Well, and then I have a little video that I want to show outside. It's about 25 minutes about a TV program that the devotees did in South Africa. So I just wanted to see something, wanted you to see something of the mood of South African preaching, a different mood maybe than what's happening here. So I'll just bring it from upstairs. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.